The great hall was packed with nobles and courtiers, far more than would be expected to witness the testing of one minor noble. He stood nervously before the throne, between the 2 seconds who would speak for him. He was unarmed and naked to the waist, as tradition demanded. He was trembling slightly, possibly from the cold. There was a bitter chill to the air in the hall, despite all the several fireplaces could do. The hall was also decidedly gloomy. The overhead chandelier hadn't been replaced yet. Prince Louis stood to one side, together with the monk and Ironheart, surrounded by a good number of heavily armed guards. They stood grim, silent, and aloof from the brightly chattering courtiers, and paid the young noble no attention at all. Count William and the Lady Gabrielle stood on either side of the empty throne. There was no sign of Prince Dominic anywhere.
Just how badly did you burn him?
Pretty badly. But with his high magic, he should have been able to heal himself.
Magic is unreliable at the moment. The unreal is affecting everything. That's why so many of the people here are wearing swords. Swords always work.
The three of them stood closer together, inside a defensive circle of their own armed guards. The assembled courtiers and nobles seemed nervous at the presence of so many armed men at court, but nobody made any objection. They all understood the realities of the situation. Jordan looked sympathetically at the young noble waiting for his testing. It must be bad enough having to prove your parentage and your social position in public without having so many unpleasant undercurrents in the court as well. The young noble's mother and father stood by, prevented by law and custom from even approaching him. They both looked anxious but composed. Prince Dominic made his entrance, surrounded by guards. Dominic looked calmly about him, allowing the court to study his ruined face, as though daring anyone to comment. When no one broke the silence, he moved unhurriedly forward to take up his usual position. He drew level with Jordan, and the two men stared at each other past their guards. Half of Dominic's face had been burned away, leaving nubs of discolored bone showing through the dark, shriveled flesh. His right eye had been sealed shut, and his right ear was a shapeless lump of burned flesh. Flashes of teeth gleamed whitely through the torn cheek. The pain must have been appalling, but Dominic showed no sign of it. Jordan felt sickened at the sight of what he'd done. Guilt would have prompted him to speak, but the memory of what Dominic had done to his own wife kept Jordan silent. After a while, Dominic walked on and took up a position with his guards to the right of the throne's raised dais, opposite Louis. The regent stepped forward a pace, and everyone turned to look at him.
My lords and ladies, your majesties, we are gathered here in ancient tradition to witness a testing, an oath of fealty to the stone. Jonathan of Veerbrook, son of Michael and Clarissa Trelawney of Veerbrook, claims the power and prestige of blood through his father's line. Let all here witness the truth or falsity of his claim.
So he's swearing to the stone?
Like so many of the customs at Castle Midnight, the testing came about as a reaction to the time of inbreeding. For a while, it became very important to establish true claims of parentage so that the bloodlines could be salvaged without further endangering them. Over the years, the power of the stone has also helped to stabilize and magnify the various elemental magics. And of course, the test also serves to show up any unreal imposter who might try to replace a real noble. And finally, it's the main legal proof of parentage and inheritance.
The young noble stood before the throne. There was a tense, anticipatory silence in the court.
Beon Klepto Fialis!
The stone slid jerkily out from under the throne. Jordan looked at it curiously. From where he was standing, it looked just like another piece of rough-hewn granite. Except granite doesn't come when you call it. Jordan tried to smile at his own joke, but couldn't. There was a definite feeling of age about the stone, an ominous, disturbing sense of antiquity, of having watched impassively as time passed and history became legend. He hoped that what he'd been told about the stone killing people was a metaphor or a dramatic exaggeration. It simply seemed unnatural. Jordan looked away and made himself think about something else. He pressed his arm lightly against his side, feeling the reassuring presence of the glass vial containing Victor's blood. Getting it had proved just as difficult as he'd expected. After De Grange's treachery, Victor had become decidedly jumpy about letting sharp blades get anywhere near him. In the end, Heather had to hold his arm steady while Jordan made the necessary incision. Lewis leaned close to the monk's cowl and spoke quietly to him while everyone's attention was fixed on the stone.
Use your magic, monk. If that's not really my brother over there, but only an actor, he must be under some kind of illusion spell. See if you can undo it.
The monk's empty cowl turned briefly in Jordan's direction, and then back again.
There is no illusion spell there to undo, Your Highness.
Lewis glared at him, but still had enough sense to keep his voice low.
You swore to me that they were using a double in public.
They are.
Then who the hell's that? If that's not an illusion, then he really does look like that. My God, could Dominic have been right after all? Could that be an unreal double that's replaced Victor?
He fell silent as the regent glared at him and wrestled furiously with the possibilities. Count William gestured to the young noble, who knelt obediently before the stone. The court grew utterly silent to hear his words.
I, Jonathan of Verbrook, son of Michael and Clarissa Trelawney, swear allegiance to the Stone of Red Hot and the king who rules by its grace.
One of his seconds handed him a slender knife. The young noble's hand shook slightly as he took it, and he stopped a moment to let his hand settle before continuing. He made a shallow cut on the inside of his left forearm, and blood ran down his arm and splashed onto the stone. It looked very red and very bright against the cold gray stone. The young noble swallowed once, and then placed his left palm firmly onto the blood-stained stone. Both of his seconds knelt beside him and searched for a pulse, but they already knew they wouldn't find one. The boy's mother fainted. His father let her lie where she fell, his face slack and gray with grief. The regent gestured urgently to his guards.
What happened?
It seems the boy had no blood after all. Whoever his real father was, it wasn't Trelawney. His mother must have been indiscreet.
Jordan said nothing. Without turning around, he could tell the court was turning to look at him. Word of Lewis and Dominic's intentions had obviously got around. Well, thought Jordan, when in doubt, grab the bull by the horns, and if that fails, try a swift kick at his nuts as he runs past. He turned to face the court.
My friends, it seems there are those among us who have become confused by the real and the unreal, and are no longer sure who is who and what is what. Some have even declared themselves uncertain as to who I am. I would have thought myself easy enough to recognize, even if I have been away for a while. But, to set the faint-hearted at rest, I shall prove to you all, here and now, that I, at least, am who I say I am. With your permission, Regent?
Permission granted.
A path opened up in the courtiers as Jordan strode toward the throne. He held his head high and hoped he looked a damn sight more confident than he felt. Sir Gawain moved quietly forward at his side, as they'd arranged, ostensibly as an honor guard, but actually to make sure no one got too close and saw something they shouldn't. Jordan stopped before the blood-stained stone.
Just another show.
He could sense Lewis and Dominic watching him closely, confused by the unexpected turn of events, but not sure what to do about it. Knowing him to be an imposter, they'd been sure he'd try to bluff or bluster his way out of the test. His volunteering had shaken them. What was supposed to be their finest moment looked like it was becoming Victor's. Jordan smiled slightly and got down on one knee before the stone. Better get on with it while everyone was still off balance. Give them time to think, and they might remember why candidates were supposed to be naked to the waist. He pulled back his left sleeve till it was rolled up just below the hidden glass vial, and then drew his knife from his boot.
I, Prince Victor of Redheart, swear allegiance to the Stone of Redheart.
Jordan mimed making a cut with his knife, and opened the hidden vial by pulling gently at the slender string tied to its stopper. Victor's blood ran down his arm and dripped steadily onto the stone. Jordan licked his dry lips and then placed his palm firmly on the stone. Jordan put away his knife and stood up, holding his left arm tightly as though to stop the bleeding. An old trick, simple but elegant. So simple, it went right over their heads. Lewis and Dominic were looking at him uncertainly. Jordan grinned at them both and dropped them a wink. Jordan swore he saw Lewis's face turn beet red. Lewis stepped forward, and his guards went in right behind him, hands reaching for weapons. The courtiers between Lewis and Jordan backed hastily out of the way. Jordan glanced at his own guards and saw they were a lot farther away than he'd thought. The monk and Ironheart pressed in close beside Lewis, apparently arguing with him, but his face was mottled with rage, and he wasn't listening.
Perhaps that wink was a mistake, Your Highness.
I couldn't help it. It was good theater.
Jordan's guards finally arrived and formed a defensive shield around him. He glanced quickly across at Dominic. It was hard to read expressions in the ruined face, but he seemed to be content just to watch for the moment. Jordan let his right hand drop to his sword and watched Lewis's approach with the best cold sneer he could manage. It would have to be the sword or a smoke pellet. He couldn't get to his flare pellets while his left sleeve was still rolled up.
That's enough! Stand where you are, or I'll have my men open fire!
Everyone looked at the regent and then followed his pointing finger up to the spectators' gallery that overlooked the court. The gallery was lined with dozens of archers, each with an arrow ready to fire. The court grew very still.
You wouldn't dare, William. Attacking a prince of the blood is treason. The nobles would have your head.
My position protects me from any such charge. While I am regent, my word is law. Believe me, Lewis, I'm quite ready to order one or all of you killed, if that's what it takes to prevent a civil war.
I don't know about the rest of you, but I believe him. Guards, put away your weapons.
After everyone had done so, Jordan bowed formally to the regent.
My apologies for creating a disturbance in this court.
You are always the gracious one, Victor. Well, Lewis, Dominic...
It'll be a cold day in hell before I apologize to you. I won't forget this, William.
He turned and walked out of the court. The monk and Ironheart followed him, and his guards brought up the rear, still with their swords drawn. Jordan thought for a moment that William would actually order his bowmen to open fire, but he didn't. Instead, he turned to Dominic, who smiled with half his face and inclined his head slightly to the regent.
Make the most of your position, William, while it lasts.
He turned and left the court accompanied by his guards. They didn't sheathe their swords either. Jordan noticed they were careful to turn in a different direction from Lewis once they left. Apparently, Dominic didn't feel ready for a direct conflict just yet. The regent stood by the empty throne, and for a moment looked very tired and very old. Jordan sympathized with him. Count William was in an impossible situation. No matter who finally claimed the throne, he wouldn't get any thanks for his regency. In fact, he'd be lucky to come out of it alive. Apart from his own elemental magic, his only power lay in the castle troops he commanded as regent. He could, of course, protect himself by making a deal with one of the princes, but William wouldn't do that. He was, after all, an honest man. That was why King Malcolm had made him regent. Count William raised his head, forcing the tiredness out of his face and stance, until he looked once again like the calm, efficient regent. It was a good performance, and Jordan appreciated it as such. The Lady Gabrielle watched her husband silently, pride and support for him burning in her steady gaze.
My lords and ladies, I am grateful that you are all able to come. Though it is unfortunate that Jonathan of Veerbrook did not have blood, we can all take comfort in a prince swearing his allegiance to the throne in these, the darkest of times. I bid you all good day and be well.
The nobles and the courtiers began to drift away in small clumps, quietly discussing the implications of what they'd witnessed. Jordan gathered his people around him and made a grand exit, bowing and smiling as he went. It was important to keep up appearances, even if everything else was falling apart around him. Jordan hadn't said anything to anyone yet, but he was beginning to feel somewhat depressed. For all his time in the castle, he hadn't really accomplished anything. All right, he'd helped Jordy find his mother, and he'd helped stop an outbreak of the Unreal, but that wasn't what he was here for. He was supposed to be taking the pressure off Prince Victor and his conspirators so that they could get on with searching for the missing crown and seal. Instead, all he'd done was attract unwelcome attention, while the crown and seal remained as elusive as ever.
Prince Victor!
Jordan strode ahead of his people, his head bowed and his brow furrowed in thought.
Prince Victor!
Your Highness, it's rude to ignore those speaking to you.
Hmm? Oh.
Terribly sorry, Stuart. I was miles away.
I understand. I'm sure you've got a lot on your mind at the moment. Look, I need to talk to you, Victor. Right now, in private. It's very important, I promise you.
Jordan glanced at Sir Gawain, who shrugged imperceptibly. Jordan knew what he meant. Of all the people he'd met at Castle Midnight, Taggart was the only one who'd struck him as being at all trustworthy, but he couldn't honestly say he knew her well enough to be sure of it. She could be bait for a trap set by Lewis or Dominic. They'd love to get him off on his own, away from his protectors. But after all the intrigues and mixed loyalties, Jordan felt an overwhelming need to trust someone, and it might as well be the steward.
All right, then. Where did you have in mind? It would have to be somewhere rather private, but safe. Nasty cold you've got there, Roderick. I'd take something for that if I was you.
If I might remind your highness, there are urgent matters awaiting your attention. Whatever the steward has to say, I'm sure it can wait.
No, it can't. There's a room just down the corridor where we can talk, Victor.
Very well. Gawain, you come with me. You can stand guard outside the door while the steward and I are talking. The rest of you stay here and block off both ends of this corridor. No one gets in or out until we're finished. Try and keep alert. Lewis or Dominic would quite happily kill all of you just to get a chance at killing me.
Taggart led the way to an unobtrusive door tucked away in a shadowy corner.
I will wait here, sire.
Thanks.
The room was small and bare, and the walls smelled strongly of fresh whitewash. The only light came from a single candle stub burning in a wall holder. Jordan let his hand drift casually closer to his sword. He trusted Taggart, but there was no point in being foolish. Taggart looked uncertainly at Jordan, as though wondering exactly where to start.
Just say it right out. I don't think either of us have much patience with diplomatic language.
You've changed a lot since you went into exile, Victor. You weren't a bad sort before for a prince, but after you met Elizabeth and she threw you over, you just fell apart at the seams. No offense.
None taken. I understand.
At the time, I thought you'd become as bad as your brothers. There's a well-established streak of instability in your family, you know. Comes from all that inbreeding for blood in the old days. King Malcolm used to think about that a lot. It worried him. We talked quite a bit, your father and I, after my father died. I suppose because my dad and I were the only people in the court who didn't play politics. We never have. Our job is too important for that. Anyway, the point is, your father trusted me. He told me where to look for his will if anything should happen to him. So when he died, suddenly I followed his directions, took the will, and kept it. I agreed with the regent. You see, I thought neither you nor your brothers were fit to be king. And then I saw you, fighting beside me in the court and again in the West Wing, and I knew I'd been wrong about you. I'm sorry, Victor. Here's the will. It's yours.
She reached into her pocket and brought out a single polished ruby. It gleamed darkly on her palm like a single great drop of blood. Jordan looked at Taggart for a long moment, and then took the jewel from her. Their eyes met, and she shrugged and smiled, suddenly embarrassed.
You stood up well in the West Wing, Victor. Not everyone can cope with the unreal. It takes more than ordinary courage. You were scared half out of your mind, but you didn't let it stop you. You charged ahead because it was your duty. I've never listened to the will myself, but I suppose it contains instructions on where to find the crown and seal. If anyone's going to wear the crown, Victor, I'd rather it was you. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Sir Gawain looked into the room.
Everything all right?
Yes. She gave me this.
He held up the ruby and Gawain nodded slowly.
Malcolm's will. You must have made quite an impression on the steward, your highness. I haven't known her to blush and go all tongue-tied since she was in pigtails. Now we'd better get back to the others. I don't like us being off on our own away from the guards. And I think the sooner we've got that will in a safe place, the better.
Understood.
He slipped the ruby into one of the hidden pockets in his sleeve. The jewel felt strangely warm, its heat pulsing against his arm like a living thing. He walked out into the corridor and joined Gawain, and only then realized he hadn't even thanked the steward. He looked quickly up and down the corridor, but Taggart was nowhere to be seen. Jordan frowned. The steward had placed a great deal of trust in him by giving him the will, because she believed the kingdom would be safe in his hands. But it wouldn't be him on the throne. That fell to Victor. And Prince Victor was rather different from the man who was currently playing him. Admittedly, it was hard to tell how different. The man had been deathly ill for some time, and invalids were notorious for their bad tempers. And yet, Jordan began to wonder if he'd done the right thing in letting Sir Gawain know he had the will. Gawain was a good man, no doubt about that, but at bottom, the knight was still bound by his oath of loyalty to Victor. And Jordan was becoming increasingly unsure as to whether Victor was worthy of such loyalty. Back in Jordan's suite, the conspirators watched in silence as Jordan handed the ruby to Prince Victor. It glowed with a somber crimson light until Victor closed his fist around it. He stood before the open fireplace and grinned broadly about him. Heather clung tightly to his arm, almost bursting with pride and happiness. Roderick's mood had mellowed, and Argent had actually been seen to smile briefly once or twice. Sir Gawain stood guard by the door, and though he watched the proceedings closely, his face gave away nothing at all. He'd stopped off on the way back to check that his wife was safe, and Roderick hadn't wanted to spare the time. Gawain had had to insist, and neither of them had been polite about it. Victor finally settled into his chair again, and Heather perched on the arm as before.
Well, get it working.
I'm just getting myself comfortable. All right. Open!
The air before them shimmered and grew vague, and King Malcolm was suddenly standing in the room. Jordan studied the image closely. Unlike the others, this was his first look at King Malcolm of Redheart. The king was tall and muscular and carried his regal robes well. His dark hair was shot with silver, but still thick and wavy. His eyes were silvery gray, like Gabrielle's, and he had the same harsh-boned face as Louis and Dominic. His gaze was sharp and commanding, and his mouth was a firm, flat line. He looked like someone who expected others to listen when he spoke.
If you're hearing this, then I am dead. I have no way of knowing how or when my death will occur, but I feel safe in assuming that the court is currently in a state approaching panic. He will have discovered by now that my crown and seal are missing. I have ordered them hidden. I assume you are here, William, as regent. I'm sorry for the trouble I've caused you, old friend, but I think you understand why it was necessary. According to custom, I should begin my will by declaring which of my sons is to inherit my position, my wealth, and my throne. I choose not to do so. It is my sad opinion that none of my sons is worthy to take my place as King of Redheart.
The dead king stood silently for a while, frowning unhappily. The conspirators looked at each other and at Victor, but nobody said anything.
Louis has become degenerate. For a time I thought he might follow in my footsteps and continue the conquests I began, but more and more it seems to me that he considers nothing important save the satisfying of his various hungers. Dominic has always been unstable. I had hoped his marriage to the Lady Elizabeth might settle him, but if anything, it seems her ambition has only fueled his madness. Of late, I fear Dominic has become dangerously insane. Were he not my youngest son, my last born, I would have had him killed years ago. After I lost faith in Louis, I placed all my hopes in Victor. He showed real promise. His only faults, those of youth and inexperience. But, unfortunately, he too encountered the Lady Elizabeth, and she taught him, among other things, the pleasures of ambition and intrigue. Perhaps his time in Cahalimar will calm his hot blood, but I doubt it. He has already tried to kill Dominic, and no man who would murder his own brother over a lover's quarrel can be trusted with the throne of Redheart. It is time for new blood. I have therefore given instructions that in the event of my death, a trusted servant is to take my crown and seal and hide them where they will not easily be found. You, William, as regent, will be forced to proclaim the right of transference, and a new royal line will begin. This will inevitably mean a time of chaos, but that will pass, and Redheart will be the stronger for it. I have no regrets for what I have set in motion. More and more, it seems to me that I have done more harm than good in the kingdom which was entrusted to my keeping. Weep no tears at my passing. I am old and tired. I have seen my wife die and watched my sons grow to be monsters. I have no way of knowing who is listening to me now. It doesn't really matter. All I have left to say is that if you would find my crown and seal, you must look among those who have gone before. There, a final clue to help you on your way, whoever you are. Wear the crown proudly, use its power wisely, and beware of the unreal. I am King Malcolm of Redheart. Hear my words.
The image of the king flickered and disappeared. For a long time, nobody said anything. Victor sat staring at the ruby in his hand. Finally, Roderick dredged up the courage to speak.
It's a good thing the steward did take the will and hide it. If this had been shown in open court, civil war would have broken out on the spot.
He called me a monster. I came all the way back here to avenge his murder, and what do I find? He'd rather some stranger wore the crown than me. I fought in his wars, bled in his battles, even accepted internal exile rather than risk a civil war, and all for what?
Victor!
Monsters!
He threw the ruby away from him.
King Malcolm has at least given us a clue. He said the crown and the seal lie among those who have gone before. Does that mean anything to you, Victor?
I don't want to talk about that now.
But darling, you must see that King Malcolm was speaking
metaphorically. I don't want to talk about it! Leave me, all of you! I don't want you around me for a while. No, wait. You can stay with me, Actor. The rest of you get out. I'll see you again in an hour.
Jordan looked at Gawain for some clues as to what to do, but the knight just shook his head slightly. Heather made as though she wanted to say something to him, but a glance at Victor's scowling face dissuaded her. Jordan was left alone with Prince Victor. Victor sat in silence for some time, staring into the fire. Jordan waited for an invitation to sit down, and when it didn't come, he sat down hesitantly in the chair opposite Victor. The quiet, crackling fire spread a pleasant warmth through the room, and despite everything, Jordan began to relax a little. What with one thing and another, this was pretty much the first chance he'd had to just sit down and take it easy since he entered Castle Midnight. Whatever else you could say about the place, it wasn't dull. Jordan stretched out his legs and surreptitiously studied the prince sitting opposite him. Victor looked a little better than he had, but his face was still pale and gaunt. The strain of his long illness showed in his sunken eyes and the tired, boneless slump of his body in the chair. Jordan sensed a basic confusion within the man, as though he was desperately searching for answers he wasn't sure were even there. Jordan tried to work out how he felt about Victor, and wasn't surprised to discover he was feeling pretty confused himself. On the one hand, people seemed to agree that Victor had been the most promising of the three brothers before he'd met Elizabeth. But given the competition, that wasn't saying much. Sir Gawain had stood by him through thick and thin, but how much of that was down to personal loyalty and how much to the oath he'd sworn to King Malcolm? The Lady Heather seemed genuinely fond of Victor, but there was no doubt she was very ambitious and ruthless. Not unlike the Lady Elizabeth, in fact. Victor didn't seem to be having much luck in his choice of women. He had tried to kill Dominic, which was a point in his favor, but in a stupid and amateurish way, which wasn't. Jordan kept working around the main issue, reluctant to face it head on. Catriona Taggart had given him King Malcolm's will because she believed his version of Prince Victor was worthy to be king. But was the real Victor worthy? And if not, what was he going to do about it? Victor glanced up from the fire and looked soberly at Jordan.
It's strange to see another man with my face. We have a legend here in Redheart of the doppelganger, a supernatural double who appears to us only at the time of our imminent death.
Are you a bad omen for me, actor?
I hope not, Your Highness. I'm here to help gain you the throne.
Yes, I will be king. I never really thought I would when I was younger. Louis was the eldest, after all, and Dad's favorite, so I always assumed he'd wear the crown. Not that he deserved it. He's been chasing everything that breathed since his voice dropped. And those he couldn't intimidate with his position, he took by force. You'd have thought he'd have more pride. I never liked Louis. No one did, really. But for all the time I was here, Dad wouldn't hear a word said against him. Old fool. He didn't want to know about Dominic either, though we all told him often enough. Even Louis couldn't stand Dominic. I think he was born crazy. One time, when we were all still kids, he took a puppy from the castle kennels and cut it open to see how it worked. None of us were surprised when Dominic took up sorcery. I'm going to enjoy ordering his death.
Jordan looked at him, startled, and Victor smiled.
Oh, yes, actor. Dominic is going to die. I should have taken my time and done the job properly when he first took my Elizabeth. That was when things started to go wrong. I loved her, actor. I loved her more than I ever loved anyone else. I used to walk around all day with a stupid grin on my face, just so happy that she loved me. I didn't believe it at first when they told me about her and Dominic. I threatened one man with a duel for spreading such vile rumors. I was so young. In the end, I had to believe it. I confronted Elizabeth with the truth, and she laughed at me. I should have taken more time and done the job properly. I should have killed both of them when I had the chance. I've learned patience since then, rotting in exile with only that stupid relic Garwain for company. All he knows is duty and honor and taking orders. Those things are for lesser people, not princes and kings. Kings don't answer to anyone but themselves. They don't have to. No, actor, I had a lot of time in exile to think of all the things I'd do if they were ever foolish enough to allow me back. On my first morning as king, I'll see Louis and Dominic and Elizabeth die. Their heads shall sit on spikes outside my castle gates, and the ravens will eat their eyes.
Victor heaved himself up out of his chair and stood with his back to the fire. His face was flushed, and his eyes were unnaturally bright.
Everyone who ever stood against me will die. All of them. Once I am king, the power of the stone will be mine, and I will take vengeance for all those long years of insult and neglect. I will command the unreal, and Red Heart will become great again through me.
Jordan looked uneasily at the prince, disturbed by the direction his thoughts were taking him.
From what I've seen of the unreal, Your Highness, it's not something to trifle with. It's too dangerous.
Don't lecture me. What do you know about the unreal? I was born and raised in this castle, and I know more about the unreal than you ever will. Now be quiet, actor. You're here to listen, not talk. I'm sick of people advising me, telling me what to do. I don't have to put up with that anymore, and I'm not going to. There's a power in the stone and in the unreal, actor. A power beyond your comprehension. My father was afraid of it, but I'm not.
Yes, Your Highness, but what are you going to do with that power?
Whatever I choose.
The harvests have been bad this year. It's been a long, hot summer with little rain. I've traveled through your kingdom, town by town, seen the hardships and the suffering. Food's scarce and market prices are high. Your people are hungry. By winter, many of them will be starving.
Let them! What did they ever do for me? Where were they when I was sent into exile? Damn peasants breed like rabbits anyway. As long as they pay their taxes on time, I'll leave them alone. And if they're sensible, they'll be thankful for that. They'll praise my name soon enough when I've made Red Heart strong again. What do a few bad harvests matter? If we need food, we can always take it from Hillsdown or the Forest Kingdom. After the battering they took in the Demon Wars, they're in no shape to stand against us.
I've been there. I've performed there. From what I've seen, they're not that weak. They'd fight back. There would be war.
Does the word frighten you, actor? I thought you made your living from tales of the glory of war, of the heroes and their battles. Or perhaps the raw meat of war is too strong for your stomach. War is the true test of kings, where they can reveal their true strength and destiny. I've had a long time to think about all this, Actor. All those years in exile while another man had my woman as his wife. All those years in a backwater of boredom and idleness. But I didn't waste my time, Actor. I made plans, forged partnerships, found willing allies for a man who would be king. I have many enemies, I know, but they won't stop me. They've stolen my woman, banished me from court, left me to rot, tried to poison me, but I'm back now, and I'll make them pay. I'll make them all pay! No matter how many I have to kill, they'll pay for what they did to me!
Although his voice had risen to a shout, Jordan no longer listened to him. Victor was as mad as his brothers. His years in exile had driven him over the edge. In his search for people to punish for his own pain, he would bathe the castle corridors in blood and plunge his country into a war it couldn't win. Thousands of innocents would die. And he, the great Jordan, would have made it all possible. Because of him, a madman would be king, and all the lands would be swept with blood and fire. Jordan closed his eyes for a moment, and visions of death and destruction filled his sight. He couldn't allow that to happen. He rose slowly to his feet and stood behind Victor. The prince didn't even know he was there. He never saw Jordan draw the knife from his boot and drive it into his back. Prince Victor died quickly, and Jordan knelt beside him as the breath and the life went out of him. Jordan looked at the blood-stained knife in his hand and automatically reached for a cloth to clean the blade.
My God, I've killed him.
His fellow conspirators could be back at any minute, and if he was found standing over the dead prince with the bloody dagger still in his hand, the best he could hope for would be a quick death. Jordan swallowed hard and tried to think clearly. The first thing to do was hide the body. The prince's head lolled suddenly to one side as Jordan struggled to pick him up. The glazed eyes seemed to stare at him accusingly.
Oh, damn it!
Jordan stooped down and grabbed Victor under the arms and dragged him back to the bedroom. He got the body as far as the wardrobe and then let him drop. As he slumped on the bed, he felt a little easier now that the body was no longer in open view. His gaze fell upon the wardrobe before him, tall, wide, and conveniently bulky.
Perfect!
It was packed with clothes, but there was still a lot of spare room.
Perfect. Ooh, my clothes.
Jordan looked down at his shirt front. Incriminating crimson blotches stared back at him. He must have got them while dragging Victor's body. The empty glass vial fell out of his sleeve, and Jordan froze as he saw the dried blood that still marked his arm from the testing. He screwed his shirt into a ball and used it to scrub at his arm.
I just need a new one.
He grabbed a shirt at random from the wardrobe and pulled it on, his fingers fumbling clumsily over the buttons. He forced himself to move deliberately and to get it right. He couldn't afford to look flustered. He pulled on his vest and cloak, looked at himself in the full-length mirror, and decided unhappily that it would have to do. In his own eyes, he looked guilty as hell, but at least now the evidence wasn't so clear-cut. He threw the blood-stained shirt into the back of the wardrobe and bent down and manhandled Victor's body in after it. He knew he should have hidden the body first and then got changed, but he wasn't thinking too clearly at the moment. He straightened up and began to breathe a little more easily. It was only then that he noticed Victor's eyes were still open. They seemed to Jordan to be following him. He went to reach down and close them, but some last-minute squeamishness made him reluctant to touch the body any more than he absolutely had to. He stood still and rubbed at his aching temples as a sudden wave of dizziness passed over him. Strain. That was all it was, just strain and tension. Everything had happened so quickly. He never planned on killing Victor. The thought had never even crossed his mind. But sitting there, listening to Victor rant and rave, Jordan had slowly discovered that he couldn't bear to think of all the good people he'd met dying bloody deaths at this madman's whim. Those people had trusted him as Victor, and he couldn't see them betrayed in that trust. There were 27 kitchen staff. 10 were men, 7 were child apprentices. All right, Victor was dead. What was he going to do now? Run for it? He wouldn't even get out of the castle. Jordan frowned. There was only one thing he could do. Take Victor's place for real. Be Prince Victor. Give Castle Midnight the kind of prince and ruler it deserved. He'd always wanted to play the part as it should be played, and this was his chance. Of course, if his fellow conspirators ever found out what had happened, he decided he wasn't going to think about that. He'd just have to do such a good job that the others would never have cause to doubt that he was who he claimed to be. And he'd better come up with a damn good cover story to explain his, the actor's, sudden disappearance. They might believe he'd got scared and run off, but not that he'd leave without trying to collect his money first. They knew him too well for that. Jordan frowned. Right now, he wanted more than anything just to sit there and feel sorry for himself, but he couldn't spare the time. There was too much to be done.
Back already?
He hurried out of the bedroom and back into the main room. He spotted the ruby Will lying on the floor and pocketed it quickly. If things went wrong and he had to leave in a hurry, at least he'd have something to show for his trouble. A quick look around to check that everything was as it should be, and then he took up a commanding posture by the fireplace.
Enter!
The door swung open, and Count Roderick and Robert Argent came in, followed by Sir Gawain and the Lady Heather. Jordan nodded brusquely to them. Gawain stood guard beside the door, one hand resting comfortably on the head of his axe. Heather started to smile at Jordan and then stopped, suddenly unsure as to exactly whom she was smiling at. The others glanced around the empty room and stirred uneasily as they realized Jordan was on his own. He smiled coldly.
If you're looking for the actor, he's in the Jakes. No doubt he'll be back in a minute.
Forgive me, sire. Now that you're recovering from your illness, you're looking so much better, it's hard to tell the two of you apart.
I wasn't ill. I was being poisoned. And the day you can't tell the difference between a prince of the blood and a strolling player will be the day I find myself some new advisors. I never thought he sounded much like me anyway.
Now, darling, don't be so touchy. Come and sit down here with me.
Jordan nodded grudgingly and allowed Heather to sit him down in the most comfortable chair and fuss over him. As before, she ended up sitting on the arm of his chair, and Jordan slipped his arm around her waist, as he'd seen Victor do.
Well then, let us discuss Dad's will. Oh, do sit down, all of you. You make the place look untidy standing around like that. If I'd wanted statues in my room, I'd have bought some.
Roderick, Argent, and Gawain pulled up chairs facing him and sat down. Jordan noted approvingly that Gawain was the only one who'd placed his chair so that he wasn't sitting with his back to the door. Roderick frowned unhappily and leaned forward.
There isn't really much in your father's will that can be called favorable. Favorable to us, that is. Malcolm mentioned his fear of a sudden death, which suggests he believed someone might be planning to murder him, but there's nothing in the will to suggest he knew who the murderer would be. Assuming, of course, that Malcolm was murdered. We have no direct evidence.
It was murder. Dad's death was too sudden and too convenient to be anything else.
As you say, sire. The only clue as to the whereabouts of the crown and seal lies in the single phrase, with those who have gone before. It seems likely he was referring to the previous kings of Redheart, those who preceded him on the throne.
Jordan chewed on the inside of his cheek as Victor's background knowledge bubbled eerily at the back of his mind. He looked sharply at Roderick.
Dad hasn't been buried yet, has he?
No, Your Highness. He's still lying in state in the family crypt, according to law and custom.
So right now he's lying among his ancestors, those who have gone before. That's what the clue means. The crown and seal are hidden somewhere in the family crypt.
Our people have already searched there, sire. They found nothing. And it's a safe bet your brothers would also have had the place searched. If the crown and seal were there, someone would have found them by now.
Not necessarily. Dad said they wouldn't be easily found. Let's go. I want to take a look at the crypt myself.
Very well, sire. I'll summon a company of guards to escort us.
No. I think the fewer who know about this, the better. I don't know about the rest of you, but it's looking more and more obvious to me that we have a traitor somewhere among our people. Think about it. You were attacked twice when bringing the actor back to the castle. Outside of us, who knew the exact route you'd be taking? Then again, somebody told my dear brothers that we were using the actor as a double in public. That's why you were pressured into attending the testing. And finally, somebody has been feeding me poison for some time. That had to be the work of somebody close to us, somebody we trust.
I'm not ready to point any fingers yet, but I don't feel inclined to take any chances I don't have to. We go alone down into the crypt, just the five of us.
Six, including the actor.
I'm not waiting for him and his damned weak bladder. We'll leave word with the guards at the door, and he can wait here till we return. We don't need him. Now let's go. I've spent far too much time sitting around of late.
The royal family crypt turned out to be a huge stone chamber on the lowest floor of the castle. They had to go through two basements to get to it. The crypt was also a sanctuary, one of the oldest stable places in the castle. No magic would work there, for good or ill, and the dead slept undisturbed. King Malcolm's family had lain in the crypt for generations, and their resting places were decorated with life-size bas-relief carvings in varying shades of marble. Some looked unsettlingly lifelike in the dancing torchlight, as though the pale, motionless figures were only sleeping and might awaken at a sudden noise. King Malcolm lay in state upon the tomb that was to be his. His body had already undergone the Undertaker's arts to ensure preservation, but he wouldn't be finally interred until the last protective spells had been woven around him. There were too many unpleasant things that could happen to a dead body in Castle Midnight. Jordan moved slowly forward to stand beside the king. The morticians had done their job well. Malcolm's face still held a normal color, and he looked so peaceful he might almost have been sleeping. Almost. The others held back as Jordan studied the dead king. Up close, the illusion of peace wasn't nearly as convincing. The makeup that gave the face a seeming of life was glaringly obvious to Jordan's experienced eyes, and when he looked closely, he could see the tiny black stitches that held the mouth and eyes closed. There was no odor of decay, just a faint whiff of formaldehyde. Jordan tried to read a character in the king's still features, but death and the mortician's skills had wiped all personality from the face. It might as well have been a garishly painted doll. Jordan closed his eyes and let his mind drift, hoping some of Victor's memories might hold a clue as to where to look for the hidden crown and seal. Nothing came to him but the beginnings of another headache. Jordan opened his eyes again and thought hard. The answer had to be here somewhere, and he didn't have long to find it. Argent was keeping watch outside the crypt, but they could be interrupted any time. Jordan looked around him, taking in the eerie carved figures that surrounded him. They'd all been sculpted with the usual enigmatic smiles, but to Jordan, they all looked unbearably smug. As though they knew the answer, but weren't going to tell him, because he was an outsider and an interloper. He frowned suddenly. Different as the many faces were, they all had certain things in common. They were portrayed in their best and finest robes, each fold of marble lovingly detailed. And the sculptors had even added stone crowns and rings. Jordan smiled slowly as an inspiration blossomed within him. If you want to hide a crown and a seal, where better than among a great many other crowns and seals? Jordan glanced quickly around him. If they were here, they couldn't be under an illusion spell. The sanctuary would cancel that out. But since he couldn't see them, they must be physically disguised. He ran from tomb to tomb, checking each carved figure. The others watched uncomprehendingly. And then Jordan's fingers stumbled over one of the stone crowns as it moved under his touch.
Victor, did you find something?
I think so. It's a bit heavier than I'd have thought, but...
The others crowded in around Jordan as he carefully stripped away the plaster to reveal the true crown of Redheart. It was a simple, unadorned circlet of solid gold. He pulled at the rings on the stone fingers until one of them came loose. Under the thin covering of plaster lay a heavy gold ring bearing the royal seal of Redheart. Jordan held the crown and seal in his hands and then closed his eyes briefly as his tiredness caught up with him. The Lady Heather moved in beside him.
Are you all right, Victor? You mustn't overtire yourself. You've been ill, remember?
Oh, no, I'll be fine, Heather. The worst of it's over now. The crown and seal are mine at last.
Until I take them away from you.
The conspirators spun around, reaching for their weapons, only to stop and stand very still as Dominic's guards spilled into the crypt. Jordan counted 17, and he could hear others moving outside. Even with Gawain's axe, the odds stank. He ostentatiously took his hand away from his sword and smiled winningly at Dominic. The prince smiled at Jordan with half his mouth, but the single eye in the ruined face was cold and unamused.
You were always the brightest of us, Victor. I knew you'd work it out first, if any of us did. All I had to do was keep a close watch on you, and sooner or later you'd lead me right to the crown and seal. Not that it matters, but how did you know where to look?
Jordan carefully put the crown and seal down on Malcolm's bier.
Dad made a will. He thought none of us were worthy to be king, but he did leave us a clue. It brought me here. The rest was just common sense.
So, you followed the clue, and I followed you. Just as I followed you all along, no matter where you went or what you did, I was right there with you. You know, you've done very well, Victor. I had you fed enough poison to kill a normal man twice over, but still you clung stubbornly to life. What a strong constitution you do have.
It was poison. But how? I checked the food every way I could, and Argent tasted the food himself.
She stopped and looked past Dominic. The others did the same. Standing just outside the crypt doorway stood Robert Argent. He stared calmly back at them.
My own dear traitor. My very own personal spy on your ranks. He kept me informed of your every move and poisoned your food. Rather nice touch, that, I thought. Who would ever suspect the food taster of being the poisoner?
I don't believe you. I watched him eat the food and swallow it. He couldn't have faked it.
He didn't. Why should he? What harm can poison do to a dead man?
He gestured languidly with his left hand. A great bloody wound appeared on Argent's chest. The sides of the wound were raw and livid, but no blood ran. Argent's face never changed. He looked as he always did, calm, resigned, and very tired. Jordan looked at Argent and his mouth went dry. There was no way Argent could have survived a wound like that. He was a lich, a walking dead man. All this time he'd been working with a dead man. Somewhere in the back of Jordan's mind, a crazy little voice wanted to scream and jabber, but he fought it down. He'd already faced ghosts and monsters and reality gone wild. He could cope with a lich. He had to, even if it was a man he'd fought beside and trusted. Roderick looked at Argent, his face twisted with grief.
Robert, why didn't you tell me? I would have helped you. I would have found some way to help you.
Argent said nothing. He didn't move at all.
I killed him several months ago. It was quite easy, really. He didn't suspect a thing until it was too late. My sorcery holds him at the very point of death. As long as I keep renewing the spell, he'll stay alive. Of course, if I should happen to forget, it's the perfect form of blackmail, really. I have complete control over him. It's a pity I can't use the technique more often, but the sorcery involved is very draining.
You miserable bastard.
You're a fine one to talk, Victor. Before we came down here, I had my people search your quarters thoroughly, just on the off chance we might turn up something interesting. And guess what we found in your wardrobe?
What's he talking about, Victor? Victor?
Oh, go on. Do tell us why you decided to kill your actor double.
Oh, what have you done, Victor? Damn you, what have you done?
Jordan's heart warmed a little at the look on Sir Gawain's face, but he didn't dare let the knight see anything on his face. He shrugged coldly.
He was plotting to take my place for real, so I killed him. We didn't need him anymore anyway. Dad never meant for you to be king, Dominic. He knew you were crazy. There's bad blood in all our family, but you're the worst, and always have been. You're not fit to be king.
You're in no position to stop me. I, on the other hand, hold all your fates in my keeping. You live or die according to what I decide, here and now. And isn't that, in essence, what a king's power is? Except, of course, I could always have you killed and then bring you back again, if I really wanted to. Perhaps you'd like to beg me to save you. I'm quite prepared to listen. I'm a reasonable man. I can always use another slave.
Jordan's hands flexed impotently at his sides. Dominic was out of reach of his sword, and his few remaining flare pellets were in the sleeve of the shirt he'd left in Victor's bedroom. His mind worked desperately, and he let his eyes wander around the crypt. A flaring torch crackled quietly on the wall to his left. Jordan's gaze fell on Dominic's ruined face, and an idea came to him. He didn't hesitate. He swept the torch out of its holder.
Don't like fire, do you?
No!
The thrown torch hit Dominic's chest and fell away, but Dominic's robe had already caught fire.
Kill them! Kill them all!
The conspirators drew their weapons and the guards started forward. Arjun drew his sword and blocked the doorway. His face was utterly blank. Jordan moved to stand shoulder to shoulder with Sir Gawain, who seemed to hesitate a moment before accepting his presence. Jordan looked at the advancing guards and knew his luck had just run out. He wasn't going to win, he wasn't going to be a prince, and he wasn't even going to get his money. All he could do now was take as many guards with him as he could. He just hoped he'd stay dead. It was a pity he hadn't had a little more time. He was just beginning to get a feel for the part. Daemon Cord burst through the entrance, throwing aside Argent. His mace gleamed dully in the torchlight. He was followed by a troop of guards wearing the Regent's colors. And behind them came the steward. Her Balefire sword shot light across the dull floor.
Lucky I set some of my people to watching you, Victor. Damn traitors are coming out of the woodwork these days.
Attack!
The two sides were evenly matched, and the fight raged back and forth across the great stone chamber. The clash of steel on steel and the stamp of boots on stone echoed dully back from the low ceiling, and the cold faces of King Malcolm's ancestors watched indifferently from their biers. Jordan and Sir Gawain fought back to back, and dead and dying guards lay piled about their feet. Jordan swung his sword with cold desperation, calling on the imprints of Victor's long years of training. None of the guards was good enough to get close to him. At his back, Gawain's glowing axe spattered blood and brains on floor and ceiling alike. Jordan snatched a brief glance at Dominic and was relieved to see that he was leaning weakly against the wall, too shocked by his fresh burns to think about getting involved. Slow tides moved through the battle, carrying the combatants in sudden, unexpected directions. Roderick found himself in the crypt doorway, face to face with Argent, and his sword faltered. Argent's blade flashed forward, and Roderick felt his heart jump as a thin red line of blood appeared on his cheek. If he hadn't flinched back, the point would have taken out his eye. Roderick's sword moved automatically through a defensive pattern, but he made no move to attack Argent. He wasn't sure he could. Whatever had happened to Argent, whatever he had said or done, Argent was still his lifelong friend. He couldn't raise his sword against him. They'd been through too much together. It would have been like killing himself. But Argent pressed his attack more and more fiercely, and Roderick was hard-pressed to keep him at arm's length. It slowly occurred to Roderick that he was getting tired, while Argent was as fresh and determined as when they'd started. Dead men don't get tired. Angry tears burned in Roderick's eyes as for the first time he began to press the attack. If he had to kill his friend, he swore to himself that come what may, he'd send Dominic down into the dark after him. Heather crouched behind a stone bier and tried to make herself as inconspicuous as possible. Just in case that didn't work, she kept a dagger concealed in her hand. The battle raged back and forth before her, and she couldn't tell who, if anyone, was winning. She could see Victor right there in the thick of things, and her heart went out to him. She knew how weak he still was, despite his marvelous recovery, but he was swinging his sword with a verve that brought an appreciative smile to her lips. Victor would defeat Dominic. It was inevitable. Dominic wasn't fit to be king. It was a pity Victor had killed the actor, but that wasn't important. Jordan was just a jumped-up little nobody who wouldn't be missed. There was no reason why anyone else should ever have to know about his death. Daemon Cord led the Regent's troops in a charge through Dominic's men, but he couldn't keep the momentum going long enough to reach the prince himself. The fighting became slow and fragmentary, and the battle swiftly degenerated into a confused melee. But soon the press of bodies was too great, and he had to be careful not to strike down his own men. Instead, he concentrated on working his way through the crush toward Dominic. The prince had opened the gateway in the west wing. Hundreds had died, very nearly including his own mentor, Catriona Taggart. One way or another, he was going to have Dominic's head for that. He met Dominic's gaze for a moment over the crush of bodies, and Cord grinned savagely as the prince had to look away. The fight went this way and that as the two forces jostled for position. Blood soaked the ancient stone floor, and the living stumbled constantly over the broken bodies of the dead and dying. Jordan wiped the sweat from his brow with a hurried sweep of the back of his hand and glared about him for Dominic. His heart missed a beat when he couldn't find him, and then he spotted the prince inching his way along the wall toward the door. Time seemed to slow and stop for Jordan. There was no way he could reach Dominic in time. There were too many people in the way. Nobody else could get there either. Dominic was going to get away.
No! No!
Jordan lifted his sword and threw it at Dominic. Yeah! The whole battle seemed to hesitate as the sword went tumbling gracefully end over end through the air. Dominic caught a glimpse of something coming toward him out of the corner of his eye and started to turn. Everybody in the room stopped what they were doing upon hearing the scream. Dominic looked disbelievingly at the blood spilling down his chest. He tried to pull out the sword blade with his bare hands. Blood dripped from his lacerated fingers. For a moment, it looked as though he might actually pull himself free from the wall. Then Cord stepped forward. One by one, Dominic's men dropped their weapons and raised their hands in surrender. The fight was over. Robert Argent fell to his knees. Blood spilled between his slack lips as he clutched at the horrid wound in his chest. He began to crawl toward Dominic's limp figure, and all around him the guards fell back, horrified by the aura of death that hung around him like a palpable presence. Even Roderick could hardly bear to watch him. He finally reached Dominic, still hanging limply from the sword that pinned him to the wall. Argent raised his head painfully and pulled at Dominic's leg.
Do something, Dominic. I'm dying. I'm dying. Dominic.
Roderick had to look away.
What a mess. All right, some of you men get Dominic's troops out of here. Escort those who can walk to the nearest cells and drag the rest out and stack them somewhere. We'll worry about identifying the bodies later when we've got time. Get to it!
She made her way through the crowd toward Jordan. He looked tired enough to pass out on his feet, but he still managed a small smile for her.
Can't seem to keep out of trouble, can you? I'd have thought you'd had enough problems of your own without getting involved with mine.
Can I help it if I feel responsible for your being here? After all, I gave you the will. Besides, I'd been itching for an excuse to go after that bastard Dominic. Now, if you could just find an excuse for me to go after Lewis as well, you'll have made a friend for life.
Funny you should say that.
Jordan reached over to King Malcolm's bier and picked up the crown and seal. He slipped the ring on his finger and lowered the gold circlet carefully onto his head. Jordan looked around him as one by one the guards got down on one knee and bowed their heads to him. Taggart and Cord knelt and bowed, and then Sir Gawain, and finally Count Roderick.
We have a king again.
Red Heart has a king! Long live the king!
Long live the king!
Jordan looked at the people kneeling around him. He looked at Taggart, kneeling and grinning before him, and made a sudden decision.
All right, let's strike while the iron is still hot. I may have the crown and the seal, but I'm not king until I've made my oath to the stone. Gawain, take charge of these guards and clear a path between here and the Great Hall. Offer pardons to any man who'll support me. Cord, you stick with the steward and me. No one is to get close to us unless you know and trust them personally. Roderick, you stay close as well, in case I need any political advice. Well, don't just stand there, people. Get moving. We've a throne to win.
You heard, Victor. Follow me, men.
Gawain took the men, save one company, for bodyguards. Cord and Taggart fell in on either side of Jordan, weapons drawn and at the ready. Roderick gave him a hard, measuring look.
You've got your confidence back in a hurry, Your Highness. But the fact remains that without me, you haven't a chance of holding onto the throne. You're out of touch after your years in exile. There's more to being king than wearing a crown and sitting over the stone. You need to know who you can trust and who you can't. Who'll take a bribe and who'll stay bought. I know these things. You need me, Victor.
Never said I didn't. As long as you remember which of us gives the orders, I see no reason why we shouldn't enjoy a long and profitable relationship. Right?
Yes, Your Highness.
Then let's get the hell out of here. Dominic might be out of the running at last, but there's still Lewis to worry about.
Just a minute, Victor. What about me?
Jordan looked around and found himself facing the Lady Heather. Her gown was spattered with somebody else's blood, and gore dripped from the knife in her hand, but she was apparently unhurt herself. She glared fiercely at Jordan, then looked at Taggart, and if anything, glared even harder.
I never knew that you and the steward were such good friends, darling. So close, in fact, that you forget all about me the moment she turns up. Do tell me about her, Victor. Leave nothing out. I never realized you had a taste for slumming.
We'll talk about it later, Heather.
We'll talk about it right now. Send this over-muscled cow about her business. I want to talk to you, Victor. It seems to me you've had your first taste of power and it's gone straight to your head. You've forgotten who your real friends are.
Over-muscled cow?
Jordan knew where this was going. He looked around him for some support, but everyone was ostentatiously studying the scenery. This was his problem, and no one else had any intention of getting caught in the line of fire.
Over-muscled cow!
Heather, I don't have the time or the inclination to put up with this nonsense. Go back to your quarters and stay there. You'll be safe there. I'll come and see you as soon as I can, but right now I'm rather busy.
What? How dare you?
I can't stay any longer. People's lives are at stake and I have to think of them first.
Cut the nobility crap, Victor. It doesn't suit you. I know you, Victor. You can't fool me.
Heather's sneer made her look suddenly ugly.
No, you don't know me at all, Heather. Guards, see that the Lady Heather gets safely back to her quarters, and then stand guard at the door until I send someone to relieve you.
What in the world? Oh, how dare you!
Heather pulled herself from the guard's grip. She looked at Jordan for a long moment, speechless with rage. The guards looked to Jordan, who just held his blank face and nodded. They followed after Heather. Jordan knew she didn't really deserve treatment like that, but he had to do it. She was quite right. She did know Victor well, too well. It wouldn't have taken her long to work out who he really was. He'd have had to break off with her anyway, and her making a scene had solved the problem nicely. He wouldn't have felt half as guilty if he hadn't enjoyed it so much.
I'm sorry that happened.
I'm not. We were never really suited. It was bound to happen, sooner or later. Now let's make a start for the hall, before something else happens to delay us.